Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Here we are, Women United, and we are here to do another marvelous show. And we're just asking everybody to call in at 347-215-8717. If you're listening out there and you want to talk today, we're going to be talking about a multitude of things and opportunities, hopefully, to improve, and we're just going to go with that. Okay, and we're going to start with a short break, and we'll be right back. And we are back now. And today is right after the holidays and Christmas, and we've got one more holiday coming up here in the next couple of days. We'll have New Year's, and then we'll be starting over with all kinds of wonderful, wonderful New Year's resolutions. So, hey, that will be marvelous. New Year's resolutions are always the greatest thing in the world to have, so I'm just hoping some other people will have some New Year's resolutions that'll stop some of the mayhem and the madness in this country and around the world. But that being said, we're going to start our show off today with what the holiday kind of looked like. Did people kind of stop buying so much? What do you think about that? Were people buying at the same rates that they've been buying at all along, or were people doing some different kinds of things?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, good afternoon.
Hey, what did you see?
I did not see. Let me just say this first of all to preface this statement. I live in Houston, Texas, which is a shop till you drop, eat till you drop type of city. That's like the thing. And I also live in a pretty much highly populated area of stores. It's very diverse, and there are a number of stores. I stay on like a primary boulevard, actually at a primary intersection. But like there's everything within walking distance from me. There's Walmart, Target, the grocery stores, boutiques, little stores, I mean, just anything you could, food places, anything you could think of. And I know for a fact, 3 years ago, when I lived here in Tech, 3 years ago here in Houston, in this same area, I've been living in this area now, I think 5 or 6 years. But you, during Christmas time, you could not drive down this street. I live down the street from the Galleria Mall. Ooh. What's going on with the phone?
I don't know what that is. Hey, we may have to start all over with that one. Let's see what I can do here. I have no idea. It's that one. Okay.
Okay. Are we back?
We are back.
Well, let me just hurry up and make my little statement.
No, I think it was someone. I don't know. It was someone at 9049 that had a little problem. I thought it was this one at first, but it wasn't me this time. It wasn't the blog talk. At any rate, just that's fine. So, keep it moving there, okay?
And so, but what I noticed is the difference from 3 years ago and this past Black Friday, right after Thanksgiving, and Christmas, after Christmas, the streets were bare. And also, I went into a store right across the street for me to purchase some bird seed from a little bird. And the man at the store was complaining about how he hasn't had a lot of foot traffic, not a lot of customers. He don't know what's going on. Nobody's shopping. And if they are shopping, they're only spending a few dollars. I mean, he was like just highly upset and disappointed because his store was not making money. And, I mean, I must say, I believe Black people and other people have just really scaled back because not only of the boycotts, but also because of the economy. People just either don't want to spend or don't have the money to spend. People are aware that the economy is getting ready to collapse. They're trying to hold on to every little dime. People are trying to make moves with their money, and they don't have time to invest money continuously in Christmas and then going to the new year with this resolution of, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. You just finished spending a gob of money on a bunch of stuff that you already had. So, you know, or don't need or whatever.
Exactly.
Or we could do without, you know, And I was just so glad that once again, I wasn't stressed out like trying to buy gifts for people and, you know, all of that stuff and running around in the stores. And, I mean, I literally forgot it was Christmas time because you didn't really see a lot of people out shopping. Like I said, I live on a primary shopping boulevard. There's probably 1,000, and I do mean 1,000, stores within probably, I don't know, like, I mean, everything is store, restaurant, apartment complex, housing division, store, gas station. I mean, that's the street that I live on. So, and I didn't see anybody. I mean, the streets were bare, I'm telling you. And this is Houston, Texas. It would take, during Christmas time 3 years ago, it would take you 15 minutes to go from one light to the next. That's just how bad it was. One light to the next. I'm talking Kohl's, that department store, Kohl's, just all kinds of stores on this street where people can go in at Target, Walmart. You couldn't, I mean, if there was a line, to get in Walmart a few years ago. Every Walmart in the city. It looked like a line going into, I don't even know. You never saw anything like it, but this year, Because as a matter of fact, this year, this Walmart, my mom told me she drove by there because the Walmart is right down the street from us, and she said Walmart was closed. So all of the protests that the people been having, didn't you say Walmart was closed Christmas?
Wow.
It was closed. So all of the protests that the people have been having for Walmart to close and allow their workers to be off have not been in vain because this was the first year that I can recall since all of that.
Well, let me say something right quick because I'm at a funeral and I got to get back inside. I got to get back inside the church.
Sure.
One of the reasons is that white people are scared of this election, and they're the ones that spend. We're the biggest consumers, but it really hurts them. Hold on. I'm coming down.
Okay.
All right. It really hurts them because when the people that really buy the brand new cars and stuff for Christmas, when they really stop spending, can people take a look at the economic situation? Okay, and they don't care about these little protests. That's not gonna stop people from spending money. Okay. Because sooner or later, the protests are going to die down like they always do. It'll be right back to square one. Okay, and that's what we have to organize around. When that stuff dies down, what do we do? We have to devise a plan. So when all of these protests and marches, but I'm totally against not marching anywhere for anything. I don't march enough. And when we stop, when we as black people stop reverencing European and Asian ideologies and come back home and realize what we have, then we will begin to spiritually rebuild who we were. We are spiritual people, then we have to rebuild our spiritual power. And that can only be done through Africa. It can't be done through any other means. Once we rebuild our spiritual power, like Chancellor Williams said, in rebuilding African civilization, then we can spread the rest of it out. But we have to begin where our roots were cut off at. And, brother, I got to get back into this film, man. I'll talk to y'all later. Peace and blessings.
Okay. Yes, and that being said, that's an interesting concept, too. And we're going to move on now to what went on in Chicago with the sister that was there. Black Rose, could you give us a report on that sister in Chicago?
Yes, the sister in Chicago, oh my gosh, let me see. Let me try to see if I can pull up her name while I'm just reciting the events. But
Okay.
At first, the initial report stated that the police knocked on the door. She opened the door in her nightgown, and they accidentally shot her. Come to find out from activists on the streets of Chicago, they said that they shot through the door. So now the report is that they shot through the door. So the father is the one that actually called the police because his son, who was an honor student, had a mental breakdown in September. So here we are in December, September, October, November, December. 4 months your son been having these little mental issues. I would like to know if he had any type of help during that time. Number two, the father called the police. Why would you call the police when you know that they're shooting people that are having mental issues all around the country? So that's a whole other subject. But the father called the police. The police, of course, came in. The father called the police because the young boy apparently had pulled out a bat. He was having a mental episodic breakdown. And so when the police came, the father had already called the neighbor downstairs, the woman, and alerted her that the police would knock on her door soon. So we first thought that she opened up the door and the police shot, which is still strange. If you open up the door, if somebody called and said that a young male is having a mental breakdown or there's a domestic dispute, you saw a woman, why did you shoot? That's number one. You have even if she opened up the door, then come to find out, they shot through the door. And now all they have to do is say it was an accident, and now you're excused. So I guess maybe if one of us are walking down the street and then they shoot us, they can just say, like the guy did with Rekia Boyd, it was an accident. So this is really something serious that we have to, again, watch. This is something that could just easily push through. And next thing you know, then it's policy. But speaking of policy, if I could just say this quickly, I was listening to a young man. He and some others have been collecting some police data, and this is the thing. Now I'm all for unions when unions do what's right. Now, the police union and their contracts, and some of their contracts, I did not know that after 5 years they can have what's in their records deleted. So any kind of negative complaints, information, that can be deleted from their contracts based on the city, your city union's contract, their confirmed meter agreement or whatever. So that's something.
Wow.
That's what I keep saying. We got to look at these police union contracts because they've made it legal. They've made it legal to be able to kill and get away with it and don't have to give a report. They get a chance, like these police officers,
in Tamir Rice's case, Loman and Graham, they already had to pay a lady $100,000 because of the excessive force he used on her. Then you let this degenerate, whose boss even said that this man had a poor performance on his job. He was able to come from one police department where he had a poor performance record, come over to another police department, jumps out the car, and in 1 second kills this boy because he shot him in 2 seconds. So if you think about it, in one second they were pulling up, and then he shot him in the other second. And so their defense was, and they were allowed to come into court and read statements, and grand jury. How are you coming in reading a statement to the grand jury? And then this racist-ass, stupid-ass, no-good-ass, damn prosecutor, McGinty, his ass, he sits up here and calls in. How you the prosecutor supposed to be working for the family and the state, but then you calling in experts to testify that the police were right? So these people need to be disbarred. And that's why I keep saying we can't just go after one person. It's the whole damn system. So start with the National Bar Association, perhaps, and get their asses to get up off their asses and disbar McCullough in Ferguson, Angela Corey in Sanford, Florida, Angela Alvarez in Chicago, that goddamn judge that was up in Philadelphia selling them little white kids so that he can get some extra money. All of these people, it's all across the country. And so how are you going to come in and say that, it was reasonable force, or they had no idea to know that Tamir was going to put the gun down. Well, damn, if you pulled up and if you said put the gun down and if you saying that he was reaching in his waist, well, didn't you tell him to put the gun down? If it's in his waist and you tell him to put the gun down, don't he have to reach for it? So that's what I get it, because y'all just trying to justify killing this little boy. And then you tackle his sister. You don't get him any medical care. No medical care. No first responder care. Nothing. Nothing. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Pretty ugly.
And no indictment. No indictment in Sandra Bland.
But if it was Cecil the Lion, you'd have the whole world coming in on.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
If it was Cecil the Lion.
A Lucy the Monkey, Charlie the Whale, Jimmy the Polar Bear, Paul the Polar Bear, anybody else, the trees, anything else, you can get gobs and gobs of people out. And so now what's trending on Twitter, I'm going to start giving you a trending on Twitter each Tuesday. So the trending on Twitter now is the people are calling for LeBron James of the Cleveland Cavaliers to take a stand and have a sit out and not play any games until there's an indictment in the Tamir Rice case. So I would love to hold my breath. Well, no, I'm not even going to say I would love to hold my breath. I'm not going to hold my breath on that. I know that LeBron James, they did put the little hoodies and all of that on and took the pictures for social media in Tamir Rice case. But first of all, I don't even understand why LeBron James went back to Cleveland after they treated him like a runaway slave. That's number one. Burning his jersey, mad because he don't want to make that city no money anymore, that broke-ass, dreary, dead-ass city. Who wants to be up in Cleveland, Ohio, any damn way when he was in Miami?
Because he was a runaway slave.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yes. He went back because he is a runaway slave. You got to understand the family guy.
Thank you.
That's why I was going to say the same thing. You got to understand who's paying these guys. The kind of money they're paying these brothers, they are not going to let them do a damn thing for their people. Let's be honest. That's just the way the system is. Now, if we had our own basketball league, we can get away with anything we want. But as long as you don't own something, you are only by it. And that's exactly what it is. The players in the league, why do you think Michael Jordan keeps his mouth shut? I don't know what Michael Jordan does behind the scenes, probably not very much, but he knows that if he steps forward and does something for his people and whatnot, man, he's finished. And the bottom line is, the athletes 30 or 40 years ago when Jabbar's and Jim Brown's and all of them, they stepped forward and spoke their mind. The kind of money these guys are making nowadays, they ain't going to risk anything. The bottom line is our people and whatnot have sold out, that class of our people. They've sold out. That's all it amounts to. They're looking at their dollar amount, and they're not going to jeopardize that or sacrifice that. That's the very same reason why all of these athletes who have these multi-million-dollar salaries are not pooling their money together and doing something just for our people. The powers that be in this country want you to do something for the Rainbow Coalition. They want you to relate to everybody. When you say you're going to do something specifically for African people, they don't like that. They do not want that, and most of our people are just not strong enough or not forthright enough to come forward and give up something. Don't you think that if we had professional sports leagues of our own, we'd get television contracts, we'd have the best leagues, and nobody wouldn't be able to, do you honestly think that people wouldn't go to watch games that had all of these stars? The NBA is probably 80% African playing basketball in the NBA and whatnot. Mm-hmm. They had a Jewish general, commissioner for years who handed it on to another Jewish commissioner and whatnot. Now, before the first guy, they had this brother, I know his family very well. His name was Simon Gwardine. Everybody was saying at that time, this guy is brilliant. He's going to get the job after Kennedy leaves. He's going to get the job. And he never got it. He was disappointed. He went on and had an illustrious career within the federal government, but they didn't get it. Now, you tell me a Jewish organization in this country, that's an organization that's 80-90% Jewish, that has a black commissioner, that has a black lead in it. It doesn't exist. That's what the problem is. We don't realize the power we have, and these players don't realize the power they have. Simple as that. If they, in mass, went on strike and said, hey, we ain't paying no more and whatnot, here, you can have your money back. We'll form our own league and whatnot. What could they do?
What could they do?
They couldn't do anything. The league would fall apart. The league would fall apart because the essence of professional sports in this country is our people.
Right.
We're the best players in every sport.
Yes. They have enough money to pay whatever fines they have to pay for forfeiting those games, and then in the meantime, in the interim, start forming their own damn league. That's what they need to do. You're exactly right. And I'll
tell you something else. They wouldn't want to fire all of them because they can't. Because that is the star. They're the stars of the league. But the bottom line is, this not to the man is not any of them that would even consider something like that, because essentially they basically, I hate to say it, they got slave mentalities. They ain't willing to sacrifice. They're not willing to sacrifice for the rest of their people. They're just not.
That
goes straight across the board for all. That's even in industry in this country. In industry, if you work for a big corporation, you'll notice how it's stratified among our people. That if they got a little piece of a job or position in the company, they don't usually reach down and offer a hand to pull somebody up, which is what it should be about anyway. They don't do that. They tend to think in terms of protecting their own interests and whatnot. That's just the way our people are. Whereas other groups, man, the first thing they try to do is get more people in. The Hispanics, that's what they're doing. Jews traditionally did it and whatnot. And that's the way it is. It's simple as that. It won't happen. But the thing we need to think about, when they had the Negro Leagues, they would fill it up. Yankee Stadium, Cleveland Municipal Stadium, all the big stadiums, they fill them up. And we own the teams. We had to play. All the players were our players, and everything else, man. And it was a money making proposition, and it would be this nowadays. But we don't have that mentality as a people, and that's why LeBron James went back to Cleveland and whatnot. Who knows what kind of deal they brokered for him, But they don't. The players in professional sports and entertainment, they don't tend to do those sorts of things because there's a penalization process when you do that.
you get penalized. You know, Claude Anderson says it all the time.
It's beyond penalization. It's blackballing because they got so many in line that would love to be in those spots and highlights, and they're probably just as good.
Exactly. And it's the same thing with the college, with college athletics. If most of these promising athletes decided to go to traditionally, historically black schools, they'd have the best teams in the nation, which means they'd get television contracts, which means it would be more money for the campus, which means students would want to go to those schools, which means with student loans and everything, the campus would be more enriched. They'd be able to hire the best professor ever. It would just be a boom and a benefit for the colleges. But, you know, they want to go to the Kentuckys and the, you know, Louisiana, the LSUs and all these schools that are in and whatnot. But if they decided, if there was a movement among the youth to go to these so-called black schools and whatnot, they'd be the best teams in sports. They'd win the championships most of the time and whatnot. It would be great, and it would also enrich the institutions. We have 20 some odd schools, colleges in this country that were founded for us. For us, there's not too many other groups. There's not another group other than a religious group, maybe the Catholics, that have that many schools. Chinese don't have it. Jews only have Brandeis and Yeshiva and whatnot. We got 20 some odd schools. There should not be an uneducated so-called black person in this country. Shouldn't be.
That's true. And, Ashira, did you find out, would you like to report on the Chicago situation? We had kind of talked a little bit about that. And the lady's name is?
The lady's name is Betty Jones. Oh, I apologize. Her name is mm-hmm. Betty Jones, and the young man's name was LaQuintio. Let me see. No, Quintonio LeGreer. Now, let me say this. Betty Jones, guess what? She was an activist. She was an activist, a known activist in the city.
Okay.
So you knew where she lived. So you shot through that door.
Mm.
Sandra Bland was an activist. You killed her. Something happened. So see the pattern? Eric Gardner had a lawsuit. She said, I'm tired of this.
Mm-hmm.
Sexually harassing me on the street. He met his wife at a protest. He was an activist.
Yeah, so rather than political prisoners now, just assassinate.
Seems to be a pattern.
Well, since you asked me about it, Patty.
Yes.
I don't know anything more than what I saw on television about the shootings in Chicago, except that it's very, very suspicious. And the young man involved was a college student who was apparently undergoing some kind of mental problem. And I'm not really sure about how the woman was involved in it. If he went upstairs, there just isn't that much information. It sounded like the young man must have gone upstairs to the woman's apartment, but very little is known except that he was killed intentionally and she supposedly was killed by accident. They didn't release any more information. So I really can't say anything about it except that it's obviously very highly suspicious and irregular from any standpoint. As far as Tamir Rice is concerned, I'm just getting in the house, so I don't know what's been discussed previously, but I was watching a news program this morning, and the cop who shot Tamir Rice had been fired from another police force because they said he was emotionally immature, and they didn't like the way he handled firearms, and they said that they did not believe that any amount of training was going to make him suitable to become a police officer or to be a police officer, so they fired him. Then the Cleveland Police Department hired him without checking into his previous record with the police force that fired him. They just hired him, period. And this is the result.
Wow.
And of course, the grand jury, as happens all over the country, is just a sham. When you have the local prosecutor conducting a grand jury. Grand juries are conducted by prosecutors. There's no defense attorneys involved. The witnesses are the witnesses called by the prosecutor. They conduct the whole thing. And when I was in law school, there was a saying that I heard any number of times that a grand jury will indict a ham sandwich, meaning that it's the threshold of proof is merely a probable cause to believe that a crime was committed, and that the subject of the grand jury committed it. It's a very low threshold, and any prosecutor who wants to get an indictment will get it. Now, they don't generally conduct grand jury hearings unless they want an indictment. So, the irregularity with these police cases is that they don't want an indictment, so they present the evidence in such a way that the grand jury just doesn't have enough evidence to bring an indictment, and that's exactly what happened in this case. They couldn't be any more wrong. How are you going to hire a cop who worked for and was terminated from another police force without looking into his record? Just, so you were a cop before, okay, you're hired. That's essentially what happened.
Well, that's essentially what they want, is basically a warm body, preferably a white warm body.
Well, yeah. You can say that. The other aspect of it is they basically just don't give a damn about someone's previous record, and either that or they approve of it. But this guy was fired, and there seemed to have been a comprehensive record of his behavior and the reasons for his termination.
Where was he fired from?
Something, it was said, I don't remember, but it was someplace in Ohio. It was a neighboring police force.
How long had he been on that force? I wonder.
That I don't know. You mean the place he was fired from? Or the Cleveland police force? I don't know.
The place he was fired from, how long did it take them to determine that he was unfit for duty? That's what I was trying to find out.
It doesn't sound like it took them that long, because they said he had an attitude problem. They did not like the way he handled firearms. They said he was immature.
Mm-hmm.
And that they also said that they believed that no amount of training was going to make him suitable to be a police officer. You know, this business about training, that these cops need training, it's not training that's the issue, it's the culture that's the issue. You know, what they're doing, a lot of what they're doing is just based on gut reaction and common sense. You know, and they're doing what they're doing because that's what they want to do, period. All the training in the world doesn't make any difference. You know, when you got a gun in your hand, you have a black face in front of you, and you pull the trigger, it doesn't have anything to do with training. You know, just like the cop who killed the 17-year-old in Chicago, who's walking away from him, shoots him 16 times, what kind of training would have prevented him from doing that? He did it because he felt like doing it.
Doing it, yeah. He thought he could get away.
Training at a mental institution, the psych ward.
Yeah, something
that
like that. But that's America. Yeah,
well,
this is America.
A lot of the people that become cops are the very people that should never become cops. That's one of the problems.
Exactly.
You know, that's one of the, I know from growing up in New York in an essentially ethnic European community, primarily with white folk. A lot of the guys that I grew up with became cops, Italian and German guys, Irish guys. And to the man, a lot of them were extreme racists, scared of black people, scared to death of black people. That was very obvious in the way they treated black people and whatnot. Later on, they became cops. A tremendous amount of them became cops. And a lot of them didn't really have very much going for them. Other than the fact that I suppose they could pass a physical agility test, a written test, and you know, they've been in the military and all that, but a lot of them had no business being cops, and I think that's pretty common, you know, all across the country.
It is not an elitist job. In a lot of places, police don't make very much money. Period. You know,
New
they
York
start
policy.
Out. They make, you know, they'll start out, you know, maybe in the lower to mid-20s, and by the time they're ready to retire, they'll be up in the upper 40s or mid-50s maybe, you know, after 20-some-odd years on the force.
Oh, my God.
The thing about New York that is not necessarily unique, but there's so much corruption in the police force in New York that I've heard, especially among the detectives, that most of what they do all day is going around collecting payoff money.
Yeah.
That's their job. I mean, they go from one place to another collecting payoff money. And I knew somebody, I didn't know him, but I met him, who was like an organized crime loan shark. And he was talking about... you know, that they would basically, you know, they would have to pay the cops off every week, period. And you know, that's indicative of how corrupt it is. And there was something else in New York, and I don't know if they're still doing it, but these cops decided that a cheap way to more money was to arrest black people for basically marijuana offenses, and they would stop black people in their cars and do an unauthorized search of the car, In other words, there'd be no probable cause. They would just stop them and search the car. And if they found any drugs, and usually just marijuana, they'd take them into the state. They'd arrest them. And by the time they filled out all this paperwork, they would have accumulated X amount of overtime, and you know, they lined their pockets that way. And this was, like, openly known, you know, and there's a white public defender, this woman who was talking about it. She was an older woman. And there was a whole television program about it. And these were completely illegal searches, and they just did it because they could get away with it. So I agree. The people who become cops are usually ex-military types, for the most part, they're rednecks. It's a high school graduate job. They're not very well educated, and they're generally among the most racist people in their society. And in a lot of cases, and I'm sure this is still true, being a police was a Klan job. You could not be employed as a cop in the South unless you were a bona fide member of the Klan, period. And that's the attitude that they have.
Well, there's also another aspect of the corruption I have a couple of police officers in the family. When a police officer in New York retires, the police department monitors their financial status for 5 years to make sure they're not living above their means, as on a police retirement, which would be indicative of somebody that did something criminal, you know, to get have that kind of money. They monitored. Now, I have a member of my family who was a rookie policeman. This was back in the late 50s and whatnot. And his partner, this white guy, was on the take. And he took a bribe or went to take his, you know, whatever. And this member of my family was with him, and he refused the money. He said, no. You know, he wanted to be an honest cop. So they busted the white guy eventually. They found out about it. And they fired him, or put him in jail, whatever they did, but they also busted the member of my family for not letting them know. And he didn't even take the bribe. They said, you're guilty, you didn't let us know. Well, anybody knows in military and police, your life depends on your partner and everybody around you. So he probably figured, if I do tell, man, that's my ass, because everybody in this damn department is on the take. I'm not going to say anything, but I'm not going to be involved. And that's what happened to him. I mean, you know, you got to understand what's happening in this, you know, pretty much within that, aside from the fact that police families in this country have a tremendous amount of political power. You have police families. You have people that have generations of police in their family, and everybody in their family votes a certain way and whatnot, man. And they have I heard on a panel show years ago, back in the 60s, I heard this guy talking about the political power of police families in this country. That was 50 some odd years ago this guy was talking about that. Well, it hasn't changed any, particularly with the federalization of the police departments in this country. It's really something. It's, you know, it's more and more, should be anyway, more and more obvious that the United States is doing the exact same things that was done in Germany, you know, when the fascists took over. It's, you know, it's very fascist. We live in a very fascist